Let's get ready for some November baseball. This is Locked On MLB.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On MLB your first listen. We're available on all your free podcasting pod catchers. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan, as you can see from my little lower third right there. You can call me Sully. This episode is being dropped on November 2nd, 2021. Sorry, there was no show yesterday, but I'll explain why in a second. And we are going to be talking a little bit about the end of Game 5 of the World Series, the game that's about to happen tonight, and also we pay tribute to an absolute beloved figure in Red Sox Nation. We're available on YouTube. We're available where all your podcatchers are. And if you got a smart device, be sure to tell it to play Podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Braves with Jake Mastriani, who we will be hearing briefly in segment two. Follow us on Twitter, Locked On MLB Pod. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. So, yeah, Halloween night, watched the game, and I just was a little we had people over at the house, and by the time everyone was gone, I had to sleep. I had to get up early. So there you have it. So I decided to just post this one, which we're going to be reviewing a little bit of what happened in Game 5, but also basically previewing Game 6 of the World Series. Now, we are in the middle of November. Well, not in the middle. We're at the beginning of November. But the fact of the matter is, baseball didn't used to stretch on until November. The famous 1954 World Series that featured the great catch by Willie Mays in center field, that was in September. But baseball has evolved since then, and while one of the things that I would change in baseball is to have the postseason be earlier, the fact of the matter is we still got baseball for another day or so. So we got one at least for tonight. And as I'm recording this, there's still no pitcher announced for the Houston Astros. And Max Fried is going to be pitching for the Atlanta Braves. I would say the Astros have the advantage right now. Sarah Langs, I don't know if you follow Sarah Langs, she's a frequent contributor to the Buster Only Baseball Tonight podcast, pointed out that the teams that won a best of seven series when trailing 3-1, obviously the 2016 Cubs were the most recent one. The 85 Royals actually did it twice. They did it in the ALCS and the World Series in the same year. The We Are Family Pirates of 79, the Tigers in 68, the Yankees in 58 against the Milwaukee Braves, and the 1925 Pirates, who have one of my favorite figures in postseason history, which is Red Oldham, an extraordinarily obscure pitcher, was brought out to throw the final inning where he faced three future Hall of Famers and clinched the World Series for the Pirates. By the way, an interesting thing about that Game 7 1925 World Series, the Pirates used an opener. They used a pitcher that they knew was not going to go deep. He actually only faced a couple batters in the first because they knew the Washington Senators liked the platoon. And so they started with a pitcher who started with one hand and then brought another reliever to start with the other. There are some precedents for this. Jim Leland did this in the 1990 National League Championship Series, where he knew that the Reds had a left-handed lineup and a right-handed lineup. So he started Ted Power, a reliever, and then brought in Zane Smith to try to switch everyone around. There are some precedents to this. It just used to be kind of a rare thing instead of an everyday occurrence. It's kind of like having trick plays or a Statue of Liberty play be the norm in a football strategy. But this is what baseball has evolved into, and I love baseball, and the Astros are going to be throwing somebody. I'm not exactly sure who. One of the weird things about this World Series, as we're five games into it, is, you know, as I was saying earlier, that it's difficult to tell what the personality of this series is. It's difficult to tell who the front runner for the MVP of this series is. I guess if the Braves win, Travis d'Arnaud with his pair of home runs, which are the only two runs he's driven in, but he's had a terrific series behind the plate and at the plate for the Astros, would it be Kyle Tucker? I mean, who would it be? I mean, I thought earlier it would be Michael Brantley, who got off to a great start, but he's cooled down a little bit. Do you know, I mean, there's no pitcher who would be an MVP candidate with a possible Kyle Wright's been amazing in his two relief appearances. Phil Maton, who doesn't have a win, a start, or a save in this World Series, has been the pitching star for the Astros in his four appearances. He's thrown 4 1/3 innings. He struck out 7 batters, hasn't let up a run. But it's tough to give someone the MVP, especially because he's let up more hits than innings pitched. It's difficult to say, you know, the World Series could have been clinched, yesterday. And, I mean, is Jorge Soler the MVP? I don't know the answer. It's strange. We don't quite have a personality for this series yet. Now, when a team comes back from a 3-1 deficit, like Sarah Langs was pointing out, it's usually when a team starts to become who we thought they were. I've seen a couple times the Red Sox have come back from a 3-1 deficit, and it's usually when the team woke up from a slumber, you know, that they were performing a certain way all year, and for the first 4 games they were playing completely differently. And then they kind of like click and say, oh, this is how we're supposed to play. And if that's the case, that could be dangerous for the Atlanta Braves, because going into the series, I thought most of the Astros games have been, as people would describe, closer than the final score would indicate, that they would go back and forth with the team and then score a bunch of late runs to pad the score. Well, that's exactly what happened on Halloween night. And the Braves better hope that that's not a harbinger for things to come, that the Houston Astros will have a sense of themselves now. Now, there have been games that have had, it looks like a big turnaround and moments where like, oh my God, this team just got off the mat and they've just dusted themselves off and nobody can stop them now. And there's been instances like that in the history of the postseason where a team has shown so much guts to extend it. And some of them even extended to a 7th game, but not quite pulled the trigger. The Red Sox in 2008, had a huge comeback against the Tampa Bay Rays in Game 5, won Game 6, and came up just short in Game 7. The World Series in 1972, the A's went up 3-1, won an absolute nail-biter in Game 5. The Reds had the lone blowout of the World Series in Game 6, and it really looked like, oh, man, the Reds woke up. But the A's were the one who held on and won that Game 7. For me personally, one of the most frustrating World Series I ever saw, National Championship Series I ever saw, was in 92. I loved that Pirates team in 92. They fell behind 3-1, looked horribly overmatched to Atlanta. But then Barry Bonds woke up and had a big Game 5 and a big Game 6. And suddenly the Pirates had the lead in the 9th inning of Game 7. And then they loaded the bases. Francisco Cabrera came up and stuck a knife in the heart of Pirates fans. That team looked like they were on the verge of coming back to win from a 3-1 deficit. That's frustrating when you come back like that and you don't finish the comeback. You know, when the Astros won their first pennant, they were a National League team. And in 2005, the one thing everyone remembers about that National League Championship Series is Albert Pujols hitting the home run off of Brad Lidge. The Cardinals lost that series in 6, mind you. That didn't even go 7, but no one remembers that. All they remember is the Pujols home run. The one thing that's really going in the favor of the Atlanta Braves at this point, I think, is the fact that Fried is pitching. And Fried, while he didn't, you know, he lost the game, he let up 6 runs, by pitching those 5 innings, he allowed the Braves to not wear out their bullpen. And so they were able to have their rested and ready squad on a, there was a travel day, and they were resting ready for game three. A similar thing happened with Smiley coming in and throwing those three innings out of the bullpen, meaning they didn't have to use Jackson. They didn't have to use Matzik. They didn't have to use Will Smith yesterday. So they have their best starting pitcher and their three best relievers rested and ready to go while the Astros are going to be doing yet another bullpen game. What I'm saying is it looks like the Astros have woken up and are heading back home, and the narrative is going to be quite simple. They'll head back home and ain't no stopping us now. But the exact thing happened with the Astros and Cardinals, as I mentioned, in 2005. It went back to St. Louis, and everyone thought the Cardinals were in full momentum and didn't even last a game. If there's one thing that we've learned in this postseason is that nothing seems to make sense. Remember, the Dodgers got off the mat. They were about to fall behind, what, 3-0? Or was it the Bellinger home run at that pitch at his eyes? It looked like the Braves were on the verge of a sweep. And so, like, oh, and the Dodgers are back. The Dodgers are back. And then the Braves won again. It looked like the Braves were on the verge with a Freddie Freeman home run. Looked they were on the verge of doing the job in L.A. But they came storming back. And you're like, okay, the Dodgers have it. They have it. And then suddenly, no. It looked like the Rays were on the verge of clobbering the Red Sox. It looked like the Brewers, after game one, looked like they were going to overmatch the Braves. There was nothing has seemed to make sense in this postseason. So don't expect game six to make any sense. Quite frankly, I'm going to make a prediction. I think the Braves are going to win tonight. I think they're going to win because of Fried and because their bullpen's rested. And because they sort of dust themselves off, so, okay, we didn't win at home. We blew a 4-0 first inning lead. I still think the Braves are going to do this because it makes absolutely no sense that they will. The only surefire bet you're ever going to make in this entire postseason is to bet against what makes sense. Because whatever makes sense is a fool's bet. And if you're going to make any bets, go to Bet Online. It's your number one spot for all the baseball, basketball, football action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. Hey, Bet Online is the place to go to for basketball, football, the baseball postseason, National Hockey League, UFC, boxing, right to your favorite Las Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline is where the game starts. Okay, just to brush up a little bit of what happened in Game 5, let's first listen to Jake Mastriani, the host of Locked on Braves.
The Atlanta Braves drop Game 5 of the World Series, unable to close it out at home despite a grand slam from Adam Duvall in the first inning. Pitching let them down in this one. Offense really wasn't able to do much after that first inning as well. Some very questionable decisions by manager Brian Snitker as well in this one with the pitching. Get it, his hands are tied a little bit with the bullpen game, but still had an opportunity to go for it in this one. Didn't feel like Snitker gave it the best effort with how he used the bullpen, but regardless, you got to tip your cap to the Astros. They didn't bow down again, even after that grand slam. They fight back, come back, win this game 9-5 and force a game six in Houston. We'll be talking about all those questionable decisions from Snitker and so much more from game five on a Locked on Braves.
Thanks, Jake. And let's go to our MLB insiders. Daniela Bruce is talking with Gordon Beckham, former White Sox infielder, on his thoughts and both of their thoughts of the fifth game of the 2021 World Series.
What's up, everybody? This is another Locked On MLB Insider Report with some instant reaction after Game 5 of the World Series here with Locked On MLB Insider Gordon Beckham. I'm Daniela Bruce. Gordon, let's get right into this. It was a game that definitely didn't lack action, and Houston went down 4-0 early in the game with a Braves grand slam in the first inning, and that had to be maybe deflating is not the right word, but it had to do something to their mentality right there at the beginning of the game. The crowd was so into it. What does that say about the mental toughness of Houston to be able to climb right back into this game?
Yeah. I mean, when you see what happened in the first, it was kind of like, mm-hmm. wow, I mean, this series might be over right now. I mean, and then one thing I was thinking about when it was happening is the one thing it does do for the Houston offense is, instead of playing scared, they had to come out and score mm-hmm. runs. So it almost kind of flipped the switch in my mind with them. It's like, okay, we can't just try to skate by and get a couple hits and find a way to win a game. It's like, we're going to have to slug our way out of this. And you almost saw the mentality change like immediately, because they knew if they didn't go out and start swinging the bats and be aggressive, then they're not going to win this series. It's going to be over. And the World Series is going to the Atlanta Braves. So I kind of sense the switch on the mindset of the Houston batters. Like, we can't just play these nail biter games. We're going to have to go get this one and really have to score some runs. And they did. I mean, it was a really good job by them not getting down, just continuing to stick with their plan and continue to just take it to the Braves. I thought their bats were a lot better today than they've been the whole series. I mean, their offense has been kind of quiet all series. And today it looked like, they lit a fire. I mean, that grand slam kind of lit a fire under Houston, because if they come out and they're like, oh, they hit a grand slam, it's over. I mean, they're definitely not doing what they did. So I think that just the mentality changed for them. They went from basically sitting on the sidelines, like, how do we scrape a run or two to, hey, we've got to go score a lot of runs. Let's get aggressive and let's do it. And they did.
And Dusty Baker making some changes to the lineup, which is bold in this scenario, an elimination game. Obviously it worked, right? So what did you see that actually helped Houston in this scenario?
Well, I mean, they moved Bregman down, and, I hear you when you say it was bold, but at the same time, it's like they hadn't been really swinging the bats well. So, like, the only option is, like, okay, are we going to just continue doing what we're doing? Definition of insanity, everybody knows it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why they switched it up. I think it was a good move, and you had Correa hitting third and then Gurriel hitting fifth, which is kind of normal for Gurriel, but Correa moved up in the order. He had a good night. And then Bregman moved down to seventh. I mean, it was the lowest he's hit since 2017, I believe. I think that what it showed is that Dusty's not afraid to make a decision that's going to help his ball club. And Bregman did well down there. I think, obviously, he's going to be grinding on his swing. I mean, he hasn't had as many swings this year as he has in years past. So he's trying to find it right now. And World Series is just tough to find because you're facing great pitching. And but he got through. He got a double today, and started to move in the right direction. Alvarez is the one that's just really struggling in this postseason. And for Houston to win the series, he needs to get hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was just going to mention too, the Braves organist playing free fall in there at one point throughout the game didn't work. Probably shouldn't go back to that.
Yeah, they shouldn't.
They went to that chance.
That's right. It's the first time that Braves have lost a postseason right. game, here in Truist Park this postseason. So the organist has been known to do stuff like that. It backfired.
You heard it here. I'm blaming the organist.
That's right.
Okay. Carlos Correa, you mentioned he had a good night. Maldonado also showed up in this game, and he had been struggling offensively. Just how big are those individual performances we're in the World Series, right? But in elimination games like that.
Yeah. Correa's doing what he does, mm-hmm. right? He's a really good athlete and he's a great player. And he kind of showed up tonight in a big spot to give his team a lift. But mm-hmm. the bigger impact is Maldonado, because Maldonado is not hitting. He's not known for his hitting. He's anything that he does is considered a bonus. What he does is defense is his calling. That's all he is really on the field for, is to really manage the staff and throw guys out behind the plate. So for him to do something offensively, it really shows that, that's something they didn't expect. So for him to have three RBIs amazing performance in a clutch game. He's beloved by his teammates. I mean, they talk about it a lot. So I think it was a huge lift, and it took some pressure off the guys that are generally supposed to be the guys driving in all the runs. I mean, without Maldonado tonight, it's a one-run game, and you've seen what the Braves have done in close games.
So game six will take place on Tuesday in Houston. Tomorrow will be a travel day. Tomorrow, Monday, will be a travel day. So an off day. Who does that benefit, Gordon?
I don't think it necessarily benefits anybody at this point. I mean, I know nobody really wants to take off days at this point. I mean, this is we're two games away from deciding the champion, the World Series champion. And I don't think either team, I think they'd rather go to Houston tonight and play tomorrow. I mean, that's honestly how I feel. But, you know, it's the World Series, you get an off day. I think that it's probably good for the Braves because Houston's offense got kind of hot tonight. You know, give them a day off. Maybe there's a little bit of rust coming off that day off on Tuesday. But it's definitely not good for Houston because they got rolling, and now all of a sudden they got to, you know, they got to sit at home tomorrow and just work out or whatever at the field. So I would say it benefits the Braves because they've shown that they can come back after a loss and have a good, you know, a big game. So we'll see what happens. But, I mean, Houston's been really tough at home throughout the regular season and the postseason. So we'll see what happens. But it's anybody's ball game moving forward.
If it was Houston's choice, they'd probably want to fly back and play the game right now in just a few hours.
So that's right. Yeah.
I can understand not wanting that off day. But so pitching matchup, what do you think we're going to see for game six?
Well, you're going to get Max Fried for the Braves. I mean, he's been their ace all year. He really didn't pitch well the last time he was out there, but he did give his team five innings of good baseball to basically save the bullpen. So he's going to be rested and ready to go. I would expect that he would do better than he did the last time. And then you're probably going to get Luis Garcia. I don't know if you're watching the game afterwards, you watching at home, but Dusty Baker said that they were thinking about going Urquidy, but since he went into the game, they're going to go for Garcia, it looks like, on short rest. 3 days rest. Young pitcher. He can probably bounce back better than most, but he is a young pitcher, and it'll be kind of uncharted waters for him. So interesting matchup to see. I mean, the Braves would have the edge in terms of the starting pitching, but this is anybody's game. I mean, and Houston's playing at home, and I'm sure Minute Maid Park is going to be, you know, really, really loud on come Tuesday.
So, like you said, anybody's game. This series has been very hard to predict, at least for me. I can't seem to get a grasp on it. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. But do you have any predictions for these last two games? How do you think this series is going to end?
I kind of thought it was going to end tonight. I mean, it just looked seemed like the Braves had all the momentum in the world, and they hit that grand slam, and it's like, okay, this is their year. And then the Houston does what they do. They hit. They threw well. I mean, the bullpen was lights out when they came in. So pitched a lot tonight. And I still think that the Braves are just a team they're a team of destiny. I don't know. It's just they've been playing really well. They find a way to bounce back. I just get the sense that they're going to win. I don't know if it's going to be game six or game seven, but I just can't see them losing three in a row.
All right, everybody. Well, we will have more on this series coming later this week as the teams travel back to Houston to decide on a champion. And for everything you need to know leading up to that, make sure you follow both teams, Locked On Astros and Locked On Braves. For Locked On MLB Insider Reports, this has been Gordon Beckham and Daniela Bruce. Locked On, your team every day.
Now, look, we all know that baseball is going to be over either tonight or maybe tomorrow. I don't know. Neither do you. But we're going to continue doing Locked On MLB, beyond the postseason, all throughout the offseason. There's going to be some, hot stove talk. Obviously, there's going to be potential lockout. I hope it's not the case. Lots of things to talk about, lots of fun things to talk about. I'm going to do some quiz show stuff. We have some cool interviews. And I will talk about, there's some big news going on, two gigantic pieces of news coming out of Oakland. One is the possibility of an Oakland stadium is creeping closer to reality, but also creeping closer to reality is the inevitable teardown of the Oakland A's. And Bob Melvin has gone to San Diego. I'm going to talk a lot about that. Obviously, we talked a little bit about that in one of the previous episodes. There's a lot to unpack there. But also what this means about the Mets, who did not get a shot with Bob Melvin, or maybe they did. I don't know. It seems to be a little bit of a mess there. There's going to be all sorts of things to talk about. New manager in St. Louis, new people popping all around baseball. There's going to be awards and everything. I did want to bring up the fact that we learned during Halloween yesterday that we lost Jerry Remy. And Jerry Remy was, as a player, an all-star with the Boston Red Sox, came up with the Angels, played the majority of his career with the Boston Red Sox. And then shortly after his retirement, became a broadcaster and became really a staple of Boston fandom. He was a New Englander. He sounded like a New Englander. He sounded like a guy from Massachusetts. And, you know, guess what? There's a reason why, because he was from Fall River, Massachusetts, and he grew up in Somerset. He sounded like a guy with that thick accent that you would be talking to at the coffee shop about the game. He sounded like one of us, basically. And yeah, he was a homer, but do you know what? So what? He was funny. He brought his memories as a player, but also his fun point of view. In so many ways, he was like Phil Rizzuto. Phil Rizzuto was the voice of the Yankees for so many years. He sounded like a New Yorker. He was a New Yorker. So he sounded like a New Yorker. And his observations as an announcer was not diehard analysis, but it was hanging out with your funny, fun Italian uncle. Jerry Remy was hanging out with that funny, sarcastic New Englander. And for so many reasons, the qualities of wanting to hang out with an announcer is even more important than their ability to break down the game. Think about the announcers you really like to listen to. Why do you listen? For their amazing analysis? Or because you like the feeling of watching a game with them? It's a friend watching a game with you. Sit down. As Vin Scully said, pull up a chair. I used to love listening to Phil Rizzuto. And the people who criticize him for not having great baseball insight as an announcer, you miss the point. So you're hanging out with that funny guy who wants to talk about cannolis and everything like that. Think about what you're like at a ballpark when you're watching the game. The conversations you have. Are they all data-driven analysis of what's happening on the field? Or do you just talk, shoot the breeze? Things pop to your head. Jerry Remy was that. You wanted to watch the game with your funny friend. And Jerry Remy was part of those Red Sox teams that I grew up with. My brother and I went to the Jerry Remy baseball camp. I believe it was at Merrimack College. My mom was listening to this. She'd probably remember. We went there in 1983. And that year, Jerry Remy had two of his teammates show up in uniform. And there's a picture of me standing next to Dennis Eckersley that I'll post somewhere on Twitter. Gary Allenson, who was the catcher for the Red Sox at the time, was also a visitor there. Jerry Remy was, in so many ways, part of the Red Sox fandom. And when you have someone there who is a homer, but you want to be with him, you want to hang out with him, you want to have that sense of sitting down and watching a game with your fun friend. That's who he was. That's who he was. Now, we all know there were some horrible things that happened with his family, as his son is in, I believe, in jail for murder. There's some horrible things that were happening that, you know, kind of put a damper sometimes on some of the stuff that you had to read about. And I'm not dismissing any of that, except the fact that my relationship with Jerry Remy was that of a friend to listen to a game with, that he was your companion watching it. And his, you know, when Don Orsillo was there, Don used to push Jerry's buttons perfectly. You know, in some ways, the best years of Rizzuto is when he was paired with Tom Seaver, and the Yankees were terrible. And Seaver, who was very, very funny, could push Rizzuto's buttons and get him to go down some strange pathways as an announcer. And that's kind of what Orsillo did with Jerry Remy. Either way, he's gone. Obviously, Jerry Remy is going to be a big part of the In Memoriam video that will be premiering on opening day 2022, which hopefully won't be delayed because of the inevitable lockout, but I digress. Rest in peace, Jerry Remy. You were a friend. You were one of us. And fan bases need that because baseball is your companion for the summer, and the announcers are the people you go on that trip with. So we got a ball game starting in a few hours. Is this the last baseball game of the year? I personally think it will be. I think the pitching is so well lined up for Atlanta that they'll just dust off whatever happened. But as I said before, nothing is predictable in this series. Hey, thanks again for making us your first listen. We're available on all podcasting platforms. This is Locked On MLB for the second day of November 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.